Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes. I will be appearing at the Riviera Hotel, one of the old staples of Las Vegas, on June 22nd through July 3rd. And I will be there with my band and my two singers, and I'm going to do many of the Supremes songs and some surprises as well. So come on and see me at the Riviera, June 22nd through July 3rd.
This is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Little Anthony of Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to introduce as my guest today, humanitarian, goodwill ambassador, dress designer, jazz and R&B icon, and virtual goddess in the music industry, Miss Mary Wilson of the Supremes. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's get right to the beginning. Did you have music in your life when you were a young girl?
Well, you know, it's amazing. When I grew up, I always sang when I would wake up in the mornings, I would just start singing or humming or whistling
right.
or something. But no one else in my family sang. There was no, I don't know. It just kind of happened for me.
Wow.
Never thought it was a talent. Never thought anything about being a singer. It's just, that's just kind of what I did.
That's amazing because, you know, usually when I talk to people, they say, yeah, I was born in Brooklyn and everybody in my family sang.
Yes. not so for me.
Yeah.
In fact, I think even now I'm the only person that I know in my family who really is in the business. I have some actors and actresses on my grandfather's side.
Right.
But so it's kind of cool. But I was always in, I must say this, I was always in, like even in the kindergarten, I was always singing, and I was in every little glee club, every little choir, every little whatever. So I guess it was a natural ability, but I never thought it was anything special.
So you probably sang during math, and many times your teacher said, get back in your seat.
No, I was.
Oh, you were a good girl?
I was a good little girl.
Yeah, because I was a dean in a very tough Bronx junior high school for 30 years. I had Jennifer Lopez in the eighth grade, believe it or not. That's another whole story. And I had Cuba Gooding Jr.'s grandkids. And I had, a whole bunch of kids, some good ones, some tough ones. So I know how that is.
Yes, that's good. Yeah. Well, one of my teachers, Mr. Boone, when I went to high school, actually, was the person that actually, he was my English teacher, and he told me I should be a writer instead of a singer. Because, you know, as the Supremes, we were the Primettes first.
Right.
And we started singing when we were like 12 or 13 years old.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that, too. I want to talk about that. But tell me about Mr. Boone.
Yeah, we call ourselves the Primettes. But when I went to high school, my English teacher was the one responsible for telling me I should write. I should be a writer instead of singing with that little group called the Primettes.
And you finally
I ended up writing my book.
Yeah, and you finally did get to writing. I know that.
Yes. Well, I did, but it was because of the teacher, of the my high school teacher. He said I should be writing a writer instead of a singer. So there you go. You never know.
And you were born in Mississippi, but then you lived with your aunt and your uncle for a bit, and then you wound up in Detroit, the Motor City, in your teen years. Of course, there was a lot of great music coming out of Detroit.
Right. Well, Detroit was a wonderful city. Well, but Detroit, as I said, is in such disrepair now, but it was, when I was growing up as a teenager, I could not have wanted a better place to grow up. I mean, they had such, community centers. They had all of the arts and the different things in schools to keep the children there, keep them interested in, what was going on. So, I got a very excellent education in Detroit.
Even in New York, even now, that's what they need more of, is to get those kids back into those community centers, which they say they have no money for. But this is what really gives kids the after-school programs, which shapes them. And I'm talking about the singing and the sports, whether it be basketball, whether it be a music program, whatever it is. That's where the real socialization takes place. It doesn't take place in the hallways, and it doesn't really take place in the classrooms anymore.
Right. And exactly. What it does is it keeps them in school to do the academics if they have these other programs to keep them, you know, happy and active and having fun.
Right.
And as you said, it's a social situation as well. So we really do need that, not just in Detroit. We need that all over America.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. So here we are. We're back in around 1958, and you actually met Florence in junior high school. And as I understand it, Milton Jenkins was putting on a girls group, and he wanted to match the Primes, who, as people know or might not know, turned out to be the Temptations. And who was in that group?
Well, we became the Primettes, and Eddie Kendricks and Paul Williams, who went on to become two members of the Temptations,
right,
in this other group called the Primes, and they
right.
were three guys. And their manager, as you mentioned, Mr. Jenkins, wanted to have a sister group so that he could take the little shows out
right.
in the community and do. And that's when one of the guys knew Florence, and she asked me if I would join. And then one of the guys went around the neighborhood and asked Diane, because everyone said, well, she sings too. So
right.
we kind of got together through the neighborhood, through the community, because
right.
we were always outside singing and things like that.
Right.
And that's how we became the Primettes. But there was also a fourth member.
Right.
And that was Betty. So Betty was the first member, actually, in the Primettes. And after, you know, a couple of years singing around the community centers and little parties, DJ parties, then we lost Betty.
Right.
We got another girl, Barbara, in the group.
Uh-huh.
And eventually we went on to Motown.
Right.
We were four members as the Supremes, actually, because we signed our contract. We had to change our name from
uh-huh.
the Primettes to the Supremes, and Barbara, who was the fourth member at that time, recorded on our first album, Meet the Supremes. She
right.
was on about half that album.
Right.
So there were actually four of us at one time, but then
and
she got married.
Right. Okay, as
so
they do.
That's when we decided. We said, well, you know, it seemed like the three of us are the only ones who were going to stick. That was me, Flo, and Diane.
Right.
And that's how we became a trio.
Right. And as most people don't know, in those days, Diana was Diane.
Well, you know, it's just like, you know, people make a big issue out of that,
right.
and they kind of fault me for bringing it up. But,
right.
you know, when you're young, you're called, instead of people call you Tommy, they call you Tom.
I hear you.
Her name was Diana, but everyone called her Diane.
Yeah, you should hear what the guys used to call me, the guys that I used to sing with, everything but Michael or Mikey.
Yeah, right, of course. See? So, you know, that really is what that's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, you know, so we went on to Motown, signed that contract, and we were only 16 years old.
Right, which is very, very young. Now, of course, you had a couple of tunes that you recorded with the Primettes at that point, if I remember correctly, and you sang lead on a bunch of them.
We all, you know, did our little bit of singing.
Right.
Florence was more of an R&B kind of singer, like
right.
an Etta James type singer.
Right.
And I kind of held up the ballad ends of it. So we all recorded on that first album.
Right.
In fact, one of my favorites was Buttered Popcorn. It was
right.
a silly song, but Florence sang that one. You know, so yeah, we took a part of that.
Uh huh. That's great.
My baby like buttered popcorn.
And so here you are now all of a sudden, and you're signed with Motown. And I guess when you signed with Motown, you had no idea what that was going to come to mean, because as time went on, signing with Motown became one of the greatest things you could ever do in the business.
There were a lot of record companies in Detroit. I mean, there were a lot of small, you know, sort of companies trying to make it. And Mr. Berry Gordy, who, of course, started Motown Records,
right,
and, was you know, he had a couple of really good artists there. Mary Wells was there, Marv Johnson. And so we would hear them, and the Miracles, obviously.
Right.
We would hear them on the radio there. And that's where we wanted to be, because they were the company that seemingly was doing a lot. And so, yes, it was a big deal when we finally, you know, landed there. But the first time, Mr. Berry Gordy actually turned us down when we auditioned.
That's interesting. Right.
Yes, he did. Well, you know what? Let me tell you what. He turned down Aretha Franklin.
Wow, that's very interesting.
So, but it wasn't so much, I think, talent that he was after. He was after something unique.
I see. Now, what was the song that you auditioned for Berry Gordy with?
Well, we did our whole repertoire.
Uh-huh.
Which was, let's see, we were probably at that time, I think, around 15 years old. Upcoming songs that were coming along then,
right,
were things like The Drifters, you know,
right,
There Goes My Baby.
Right.
I think the Florence did something from Ray Charles.
Right.
Tell Me What I Say, something like that.
Right.
So they were all, you know, just whatever was songs of the day we would do. And we had about five different songs.
Uh-huh.
And he really liked us. But we found out later the reason that he had turned us down was that we were four young girls.
Right.
And here's a young man trying to start a record company, you know,
right,
and he didn't want to be responsible for four teenage girls running
uh-huh
around his company. God forbid anything should happen to them or whatever. So, you know, I found out years later that was why he turned us down. It wasn't because of our talent or the ability. But we were very crushed.
No,
we walked out of that building mad. How could he turn us down? You know, we're so good. It didn't stop us.
Well, you know, and then the way I understand it, you were actually on the road and on tour, and Where Did Our Love Go started to take off, and all of a sudden you had yourselves a number one hit.
So bad.
couple of years later. We actually, when he turned us down, we weren't 16 yet. We went back to the company. We stayed there every day. I mean, after school, we would just hang out there every day after he turned us down. And it ended up where we recorded a couple of songs at another company.
Right.
And we were singing with, I can't even think of the people's names right now. But anyway, so eventually we decided, no, we want to be at Motown because that's where the happening is. And so we would end up there every day after school. And eventually Mr. Gordy did sign us when we were 16 years old.
Pretty smart to hang around.
Yeah, right, be persistent, right?
Somebody was very smart in the group and says, you know, because a lot of groups would have walked away and said, nah, this is not going to happen. But, you know, you were persistent.
We were all very persistent. Once we started singing together,
right,
we were together every single day, all four of us. We were girls on the telephone with each other, you know,
right.
We would pick out our dresses together. We were just great, great friends. And we just made up our minds that that's where we wanted to be, at Motown. So eventually, you know, Mr. Gordy did sign us. And it took about, that was 61 that we signed our recording contract.
Right.
We didn't get Where Did Our Love Go at record until 1964.
Right. Well, I read that was supposed to be a Marvelettes tune, and they turned it down, and you weren't crazy about it, and you recorded it anyway, and there it was. It wound up being a number one record.
Yeah, right. But, you know, we weren't in the position to say, oh, we don't want to record that.
Absolutely. I know what you mean.
We had recorded quite a number of songs up to that point, and we had also graduated from school.
Right.
And it was at a time when we needed to decide what we were going to do for our lives. And our parents were after us to go to college, and we were telling everyone at Motown, hey, guys, we need a hit record because this is what we want to do for the rest of our life.
Right. Wow.
If we don't start, you know, making some money or doing something, our parents are going to stop us from singing.
Right, and I hear you, yeah.
Yeah, pretty soon, though, you know, Mr. Gordy, after about six or seven records we recorded, Mr. Gordy finally put us with the great writing team of Holland, Dozier, Holland.
Absolutely.
And that's when we got our hit record. But that was in 1964. Well, 1963 we started with them.
Right, and then they came pretty quickly, the hits, and I think at one time, one right after the other, right after the other, they were all hits. And it's all of a sudden, you know, the floodgates opened and the love lights were shining, as they said in the biz, you know.
And that was one of the first songs that Holland Dozier Holland did for us. And it was, you know, kind of like a bubbling under the top 100. I think it actually went into the top 100.
Right.
And that was like, whoa, a great sign.
Did he?
Run Run, which didn't do so well.
Absolutely.
It was almost unheard of. It was unheard of.
And I wore out the grooves on all of them. I mean, Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love. Let me tell you that it must do your heart good when you see 14 and 15-year-old girls doing the choreography to Stop in the Name of Love. And, you know, you see that, and they probably don't even know that it's you, but you must see that all the time, and you say, hey, we did that.
Well, you know, actually, when I do my shows, I do them all over the world. In fact, I was in Russia earlier this year.
Right.
And I also did a tour in the UK, and the audiences are comprised of people from, you know, teenagers all the way up to my age in the 60s and 70s. years old.
Absolutely.
And they were doing Stop in the Name of Love. So it's not just the young, it's mostly the older women who come on stage and do Stop. And that is hilarious.
And I live in Southern Florida, you know, which is the mecca of the baby boomers. And let me tell you that, you know, they love the Supremes and the Temps. They can't get enough of that. Tell me actually about Maxine Powell.
Oh, she's just wonderful. And you know, she's up in age now. Maxine Powell was one of our instructors and mentors at Motown Records when they developed this department at Motown called Artist Development.
Right.
And it was comprised of, as you mentioned, Mrs. Maxine Powell, who was our motivator.
Right.
And she taught us things that actually I still use today. You know, she told us one time, she says, you ladies are diamonds in the rough.
Right.
And we are just here to polish you.
Gotcha.
So she said, one day you'll be singing before kings and queens. Well, we just laughed at her. We were only 15 or 17 years old.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like kings and queens. You
right.
know, what are you talking about? And she told us how to get in and out of limousines. And you see some of the stars, the young stars
yeah,
today.
Yeah, I know.
And the tabloids. You know, and they were pretty embarrassing how
That's
they, you know, they you could see certain things that you weren't supposed to see when a lady is getting out of a car.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Powell taught us all that back
right.
then in the 60s.
Well, you know, and not only that, I mean, like the old studios, like you know, United Artists and some of the old ones, when you take some of the older stars, they had people that came in and actually groomed them and taught them what to do with their hands and how to stand and how to turn. And, you know, because on stage, I see a lot of singers now, they still don't know what to do with their hands.
Well, because no one's teaching them. No one's training
exactly.
them. Exactly. And that was something that Motown caught. And, you know, maybe they got the idea from the old Hollywood studios about, you know, how to teach whatever. But it's just wonderful because by the time we became famous, we started doing international traveling, and we were hanging out with kings and queens. And,
right.
And with princesses and things like that. I have pictures of us right now with Princess Margaret and Princess Anne.
Which is...
You know, so she taught us those things, and by the way, when we became famous, we were prepared. Now, one thing that I've noticed on, like, you know, American Idol and...
Right.
You know, they're getting the education and training, but they're getting it out in public.
Right.
And that can be very, very very embarrassing. You
right.
know, we would shit. We had this done for us.
Gotcha.
We were already, you know, there. Now you see the major stars, they're making lots of money.
Right.
But it's taken a long time for them to get it together in terms of how to present themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I started singing when I was 15 professionally. And, you know, I'm in my 60s now, and I've had a nice career, and I've written a few tunes, and never had the big hit, but I did spend some time singing. And I got very friendly with a lot of people. I'm friendly with Lala Brooks, and I'm friendly with Roz and Annette from the Vandellas. And what's funny about them is, you know, they've had lots of many good experiences in England as well, you know, and spent a lot of time over there. And so the music is loved in the UK as well. They really like their R&B and their Northern Soul.
Oh, yes. I would like to say, I just returned from the UK.
Right.
And in fact, I'm going back again. Guess what?
Uh-huh.
I'm going back on tour with Bill Wyman of the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
He has, of course, he's no longer with the Rolling Stones,
right.
now, but he was with the original guy.
Right.
And he has a band called the Rhythm Kings. And like you say, they love American music so much that Bill asked me to be on tour with him this coming, I think it's October through December, so I'll be over there with him. They absolutely adore
wow.
American music. I mean, just adore it. And like you say, Northern Soul, they remember people or artists without, you know, records. Whereas here, if you don't have a record, a current record, people tend to forget you. You know,
yeah, I know. And there's, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of big stars that still work and they're still doing their hits. I mean, I know because I did years and years and years of oldie shows. And of course, you know, you get up, you fly out for 3 days to do your 20 minutes, you know, you know, and that's the thing. And a lot of groups are kind of locked in to doing, you know, their hits. And then leaving, and they have so much more to offer. And we're going to talk more about some of the tunes that you do, because I know that in your heart, there's a lot of jazz there, as well as the R&B hits and the Supremes things that you did. Because in my eyes, and I'm going to tell you this, you could have been the lead for the Supremes just as easily, because I've heard some of the ballads and the things that you've done that I have not gotten a chance to hear, you know, and I've done that, you know, over the last couple of days. And, oh, my goodness, you know, Mary, you know, has a whole musical career other than the Supremes that you have to offer the world.
Whatever you want, whatever you need, anything you want done, baby, I'll do it naturally. The every woman, it's all in me.
Right.
And
I'm 64, you know, and okay. I'm creeping up, you know.
But I'm very proud of having been a Supreme and having all these wonderful 12 number one songs and all that. However, after, it's almost 50 years now, I finally got to the point where I said, well, I love my career, but I'd like to maybe stretch out and find out who I am as a singer, as Mary Wilson.
Right.
And that's why I put together a show, a jazz show, that I've actually, I taped it, it's a video and the audio, and I was only just doing it just to see if I could really do it.
Right.
People loved it. And so now, I'm, you know, I do my jazz show. I'm doing things on the show like Here's to Life.
No complaints and no regrets. I still believe in chasing dreams and placing bets. But I have learned that all you give is all you get. So give it all you got. My share, I drank my fill, and even though I'm satisfied, I'm hungry still to see what's down another road beyond the hill and do it all again. So here's to life and every joy it brings. So here's to life, to dreamers and a dream. Funny how time just flies, from warm hellos to sad goodbye, and leave you with the memories you've left behind to keep your winters warm. Well, there's no yes in yesterday, and who knows what tomorrow brings or takes away, as long as I'm still in the game. I'm gonna play for laughs, for love, for life. So here's to life and every joy it brings. So here's to life, to dreamers and a dream. Here's to life, here's to love, here's to here's to love. Here's to you. Some folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood, hop a flight from Miami Beach or to Hollywood. But I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line, 'cause I'm in a New York state of mind. In their fancy cars and their limousines, I've been high in the Rockies under the evergreens. I ain't got any reasons I left them all behind, 'cause I'm in a New York state of mind. It was so easy living day by day. I was out of touch with the rhythm and blues. But now I need a little give and take. The New York Times, the Daily News. Comes down to reality, and it's fine with me, 'cause I let it slide. I don't care if it's Chinatown or on the riverside. I ain't got any reasons. You see, I left them all behind, 'cause I'm in a New York state. It was so easy living day by day. I was out of touch with the rhythm and the blues. But now I need a little give, a little take. The New York Times, the Daily News. Third and West End. I had so much fun. It was right around the corner from Lincoln Center.
Times. You look like the New York Times. Society. You know what I'm talking about. Oh, yeah. You know, actually, we the Supremes performed at Lincoln Center in 1965. We opened that place. Remember that, right? Yeah. Yeah, we opened it. We were the first act in there. Sure did. There's this wonderful poster. Oh, I'm just going on and on. That's not it.
I'm in a New York state of mind.
Body and Soul.
Right.
Even the I Believe in You and Me, which the
Oh, I love that song. I've done that song on stage, too.
Yes, the four chops.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful.
The song I first heard by Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops, and I said, guys, can I sing that song? Because it reminds me of my mom, Johnny May, who I know is up in heaven.
I believe.
I do.
Yeah.
Some Sting songs like Fields of Gold.
Right.
I do some Latin songs. Some I do, what is it, Girl from Ipanema, Mascanada.
Right.
Don't Know Why, which is, you know, that's kind of a current song, but it's a beautiful song.
Right.
And Tears in Heaven that Eric Clapton did, I did that song because my son passed away.
Yes, I did hear about that. And, you know, we don't have to dwell on that. But, you know, what I'm saying is that, as I said before, you know, real life, you know, there are the highs, you know, and everybody thinks it's all just glamour and that, but it's a lot of hard work. And then there are the lows, because while you're having all of those 12 number one records, there's the real life stuff that goes on too.
Well, you know, you can't forget that you are a human being.
Right.
And audiences that, or the artists that I like best are the ones who really put their life into their music. And that's what I've tried to do. You know, I've tried to pick songs that have a personal meaning for me, because
right.
then I can be true. I can, I'm telling the truth, even if I didn't write it. It has a real, honest meaning to me. So, yeah, that's
right.
one of the reasons that I do the jazz set. So it gives me, I can do my Supreme set. I can do my jazz set.
My heart is sad and lonely. I sigh for you, dear only. Why haven't you seen it? I'm all for you, body and soul. I spend my days in longing and wonder why it's me you're wronging. And I tell you, I mean it. I'm all for you, body and soul. I can't believe it, it's hard to conceive it, that you turn away my romance. Are you pretending it looks like the ending? Unless you give me one more chance to prove, dear, my life a wreck you're making. Oh, I swear I am yours just for the taking, and I'd gladly surrender myself to you, body and Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
And then I do rock.
Right. Oh, great.
My next album is going, well, I shouldn't say next, because I have a new album out.
Uh-huh.
It's not really out just yet, but over in the UK, the single from it is out. It's called Life's Been Good to Me.
Right.
That's a kind of current song, but in my live show, I often do a lot of rock songs, because I think of myself as a little Tina Turner.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, she's great, but I mean, I fell into this by accident. Gus Dudgeon, I don't know if you remember him.
Right, I know the name.
He did a lot of things with Elton John, and so he produced my last album with Motown Records before they released me in 1979.
Right.
He actually recorded me, and he recorded me on the Creedence Clearwater song.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Wilson!
You know, you did just about everything there is to do, including Ed Sullivan and all of the TV shows and Shindig and Hullabaloo and just about everything there was to do. So now I think having done all of that in their way, doing it, you know, as a formula thing, because I know when you went out with the Supremes, it had to be only one way and it was super rehearsed. But now you get a chance to do it the way you want to do it.
And that's what's great about having a career that is long. And, you know, longevity says a lot about any profession. You know, if you can survive in it, then you find time to do other things. It leads you to other things to do.
Hey.
And that's what I've done. I've been able to explore myself And without giving up my past, I don't think anyone should give up their past.
Absolutely not. Because you want to know something, you have to go to here, to here, to here, and to here to get to there. And that's all part of the building blocks that are there when you arrive at wherever you happen to be at the time. So you can't take those away or everything just falls apart. That's your foundation.
It is a journey. You know, life is a journey. And I found if you find a career or a profession or a job or, you know, whatever it is in your life that can take you through that entire journey, but still you're able to do other things along that journey, it's a beautiful thing. You learn more about yourself, or you, things that you thought you never could do or never would do. You know, you find out, oh, okay, now I'm in a different place. I think I can do this. I used to hate okra, the vegetables.
Right.
And I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, I'd sit there, they'd make me sit all day long because I wouldn't eat that okra.
And now?
So now I love okra.
No kidding.
I think life is like that.
It depends. On what you put on it. You got to put something tasty on it. You know, I want to say something, too, in the midst of all of this. And basically, not to go through all the Supremes that came and went and came back and the changes with Cindy and, you know, who was there on what date. But Mary Wilson was there at the beginning. Mary Wilson was there throughout, and Mary Wilson was there at the end. So you really, truly were the backbone of the Supremes because you were there every moment through the good times and the bad. And I think people should know that.
Well, that's nice. You know, I always say that it took three of us, and for me, there's nothing like the original three, okay? Once the original three were no longer there, it became a different group, but we were able to, you know, continue on in a Supreme-like manner.
Yeah.
I loved all the girls that came in.
Right.
I loved the music that we did in the 70s. In fact,
right.
I got to bring this up.
Right.
Motown Universal have just released the most beautiful package on the Supremes.
Right.
And it's called the Supremes' Final Sessions. And so they're right up to the point that you just mentioned when the group was disbanded.
Right.
And that was the final sessions were with some of it was Cindy Birdsong,
right.
Sherry Payne, and myself.
Right.
And then,
right.
of course, at the very end, Suzy Green came in.
Right.
So this is just recently released. It is it's such a beautiful package. So I suggest that a lot of your listeners who are Supreme or Motown fans kind of get it because it's
right.
just beautiful.
and it goes like this. Hello, everybody. Joey D from the Starlight is here, and you're listening to me and my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Jimmy Beaumont from the Skyliners, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Does he love me? I want to know.
Well, there's something that I want to say, too. I'm going back about 20 years, and this is in Poughkeepsie, New York. I was singing with my group, Harmony Street, at that time. I had three ladies, bass singer and myself on lead. We actually got to do, we were the entertainment for the Christmas party for Bill and Hillary in 98, at that Christmas party. But the show was, I think, the Solid Gold Jukebox with Rick McCaffrey and Gary Lee Schwartz. You were there, I was there, Chuck Rubin was there, and Andrea Siegel from Oldies Forever, and we were talking about Truth in Rock, and that was 20-some-odd years ago. I'm sure you might remember the night, but we were all there on the radio in Poughkeepsie for about 4 hours talking about Truth in Rock, way back then.
Yes, Truth in Rock is really just a beautiful movement. And, you know, that was actually was a grassroots movement.
Right.
A lot of the groups like the Drifters and so many people. I can't even think of everyone who was there because so many people were ripping off our names, our famous monikers, you know.
Absolutely.
And so we all got together and we said, why should we spend our money on legal things trying to stop these people from using stealing?
Right.
Actually, and calling themselves like the Platters, you know, poor Herb Reed, who was the only Platter left. Now.
I love Herb.
There's so many Platter groups out there, and he can't even work in Vegas because all these other fake groups.
Well,
so
you
that's
know
how that actually came about, that movement, Truth in.
Well, you're in Vegas, and you know the famous Charlie Thomas scenario with John Stossel when he went up to the group and he said, you know, show me your face on the album. And they realized who it was, and they all hid back in the trailer, and they refused to come out and do the show because Charlie said, hey, you know, you're taking my money, and your name's not on the album. Here's my face. Where's yours?
Yes, yes. So I mean, that's really kind of hard. Certain things that are tangible, you know, if someone would come out and start their own company on Coca-Cola, well, they'd be thrown under the jail.
Right.
But by the same token, with singers, you know, it's not so tangible. People get away with it. So that's why we started the movement of truth and music. And I got to say that I'm no longer involved in it with the company that are actually still, you know, trying to get it moved into legislation. But I still support it dearly.
Oh, I know. I know that. And I know some of the people that you've worked with. And, of course, I'm friendly with Bowser. And I'm friendly, of course, with our mutual friend, Don Riggio, who was nice enough to reconnect us after all those years. And I know how really people that are in the business, they have this in their hearts. There's no reason why somebody who is 30 years old should be out on stage and singing the hits of the people that earn the right to be there.
Well, let's call a spade. I mean, they're actually stealing.
Yes,
okay?
You're right.
They're stealing our identities, and people go out to see them. Well, so, you know, it's like people need to stop going to see the phony groups. But they love the music so much, you see. It's the music. They love the music, so they just want to hear it.
You
but
know,
people, what I'm finding today is that honesty is something that we just don't have enough of. And
you're right.
We've lost honesty.
You're
we've
right.
lost integrity. And we need to get that back. So I'm hoping that the Truth in Music bill will soon become a federal legislation, and that way we can go after these people legally.
Oh, I'm sure. It was several years ago, and my Harmony Street group was singing in Greenwich, Connecticut, and we look up, and all of a sudden in walks Diana with her entourage, and she said, I want to hear this group. You know, I've heard so much about this group and their harmony. She sat down. She was very gracious, and she listened to us, and she gave us the high sign, and she had some dinner and spoke to us for a little bit. And then she said, I'm putting something back together with the Supremes, and you watch for it. And this is several years ago, she said, and we're going to do a little comeback thing. And then, and I'm talking freely, if I may, they started to put it together, and then they had a little preview on TV, and I watched the preview, and I was kind of aghast, and I said, oh my goodness, this looks to be really not as rehearsed as it should be for starting a national tour with bringing back the Supremes, and I noticed that you weren't there. And I remember them booking the Hartford Civic Center, which holds about 25,000-30,000 people, and about 1,500 showed up. And I was just wondering if you had any recollection of that, or you had any thoughts about that comeback that the Supremes did a few years ago.
Well, it wasn't the Supremes did. The Supremes would not be anyone but Diane, if it were, and myself and Cindy Birdsong.
I hear you.
And now, and you know what, I love Diane dearly, so I don't even want to get into that part of it.
Okay.
I think the initial idea of what should have happened was a great idea.
Right.
To have a reunion of the Supremes, and obviously Florence couldn't be there because she passed away.
Right.
But, you know, Diane, myself, and Cindy could have done it.
Right.
I think they got in a little over their head, and someone didn't have the right understanding of what it was and how much it meant to people.
Right.
It meant a lot. I mean, I have people today.
Well, it broke my heart because I didn't see what I needed to see, what I expected to see, and I was a little let down, and I went, oh, gee, you know.
I think someone just kind of didn't understand the totality of the situation, you know, and how much people really did love the Supremes, and how much we men in history. I mean,
and still loves. Well, you know, the Supremes are part of Americana. I mean, that's just how it is. It goes
like in the Beatles, you know, and you have, you know, Elvis Presley, and you have all these people. But it was really at that point the Beatles, Elvis Presley, and the Supremes who was just like, those were the icons of the 60s. There were many great singers. I'm not saying that, but I mean, so people who really changed, you know, I can't even begin to tell you how people come up to me like Oprah Winfrey and just so many people and say, you know, when we saw you girls on the Ed Sullivan show, We were saying black people on television, beautiful black people on television. It was a big thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, absolutely it was. You know, we talked about Herb Reed, of course, and Jimmy Keys of the Chords, whose kids I also taught in the Bronx. And Lala told me, as a matter of fact, Lala told me a story. She said, you know, we were on the Dick Clark tour, and she said Len Barry from the Dovells used to go in, and they used to get us sandwiches at the deli because we weren't allowed to go into the deli. And one day Diana said, I'm going into that deli. I'm Diana Ross and whatever. And they asked her to leave, and she said, oh, my goodness, that's how bad it really is. Because the same people, as Herb would tell me, that made love to the music that they sang did not want to eat with them in the restaurant, and it was very, very tough in the South, even though you had a hit record.
Well, you know, that's the way the world, that's the way America was. Thank God things have changed. We even have a black president. Things have really changed.
Absolutely.
You know, those were the laws then. Those were the laws, and we had to abide by them. But you had a generation of people coming up like us who, you know, really, I think the music helped to change a lot of those civil rights things that were going on. The music brought people together, and thank God, I'm just happy that we were a part of that. But yeah, we did experience a lot of it, trust me.
I just hope that the new kids that are now singing this music and their music, the R&B kids and whatever, understand what went on before them in order to pave the way for them to be there. They're all talented and they're all great. And of course, and they all, you know, they're all now with the new wave of music lawyers, you know, the Herb Reeds and the Jimmy Keys didn't make the money. But as we moved along and the groups got more sophisticated about what they needed to do to protect themselves, that was one thing. But I think I would hope and pray that the groups of now really understood what other groups went through in order to pave the way for them.
Yes, well, I think that's why a lot of us still talk about it, because we do want to pass that on, because we were pioneers. And there were pioneers before us, you know. We mentioned Herb Reed of the Platters. They were really one of the original pioneers of rock and roll.
Absolutely.
Along with Little Richard and Chuck Berry and what's his name? I found my thrill.
Chuck.
And you know, he's still alive. I can't believe that. He's still alive.
Fats Domino and Chuck Berry, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and so those were, you know, I would like to get a program and document it and interview the people who are still around from the early days of rock and roll.
Oh, that'd be a wonderful program. You know, Terry Stewart's a very good friend of mine of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I knew him socially when he lived in Connecticut and, you know, had the pleasure of singing, you know, at his house and everything. And we talk all the time, and I did an interview with him. And people just, there's so much adoration for the people that reach that pinnacle and are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you being one of them. And, of course, you live in a town with a lot of my friends like Anthony and Clarence and so many of them that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. But
yes, we often get together, too, Lil Anthony and Imperial.
Right.
A couple of the Fifth Dimensions here. I mean, a lot of us always get together and have a wonderful time.
And Anthony is so humble. I said to him, you know, your sound was so pure and so great. He says, oh, come on, man. There were so many groups that were better than us. And he started to name them. And I said, you're too modest. I told him.
It was a great time. I mean, the music of that day, I'm so happy, you know, that I came along, or we came along at that time. Because we're all kind of like extended family. You know, we really get together and enjoy each other. So I'm glad the people, the public, the fans still enjoy that music.
Tell me.
And now, you know, I've got to mention. I got to mention something.
Absolutely.
I'm working in Vegas. When? June 22nd through July 3rd, which is going to be just tremendous, and I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. Well, maybe Paulette and I will come out. We always stay at the Wynn, and we have a lot of friends out there. And, you know, maybe we'll come out during that time because, you know, like Clarence and Anthony always say, hey, you know, we're going to go have dinner or we'll go play golf. Tell me a little bit about Michael Jackson. I understand your son played with Michael when Michael was young.
Well, when the Jackson 5 came to Motown, were brought to Motown, those of us who had brothers and children or whatever at the time would, you know, have let them all hang out together because they were so young, you know.
Right.
It was I think Diane's brother was around the same age as Michael, and my adopted son was around the same age.
Right.
So they all played with Michael because they were the younger guys, you know. And in fact, even just before Michael died, I mean, anytime I would see him around the world,
right,
he would always, we'd take the pictures and we'd do the things we need to do, and then he would always kind of slide up next to me after everyone kind of went away, and he said, "Mary, how is Willie?"
Oh.
Willie was my adopted son, so I always knew, I always said to myself, that's Michael, because he would be the only person who would say that, you know, about the time when he was young. He wouldn't talk about the business or songs or anything. He just said, "How is Willie?"
Wow.
I thought that was such, so much of who he was.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. And he was, of course, he was loved. You know, let's talk a little bit about the gowns that the Supremes had. I know that aren't you doing some kind of a showing? And weren't some of those creations your creations?
Oh, no. They had nothing to do with that.
Oh, you just slithered into them and zipped them up and went out and did the singing.
Well, when we first started, you know, we had to either borrow money to make our little costumes and things like that. But once we became famous and we started working at the television studios like NBC and things like that, they would actually make our gowns, some of the gowns for their shows. And like the Ed Sullivan Show, they had designers on them. So we started running into all of these designers.
Right.
And at that point, they would say, well, you know, we can bring you some designs if you would like them. And that's how we really got into getting, you know, designer gowns made for us. Michael Travis, who did for Carol Channing and Liberace, you know, his great costumes.
Right.
Well, he did many of our costumes, Michael Travis. And so that's how we got into all the gowns. And once Florence left and then Diane left, the gowns, everyone had to leave their gowns there with me because I was the only one, you know, the group was still going, and I was the only one there. So I ended up with all of the gowns. It was,
wow.
It was my intention. It was just that, you know, they just kind of stayed with the company here. We were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
And they were opening up their museum there in Cleveland. So we started talking, and I said, well, I have gowns. I said, oh, we've been trying to get, you know, in touch with someone to get the gowns, and I said, well, I got them all. Well, I don't have them all, but I have the majority of them.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's pretty soon we talked about them curating the gowns, which they did a great job. They were exhibited there for a couple of years, and then they went on to other museums here in the United States, smaller museums, and then we went to the UK for 3 years. And the gowns were initially at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and then they went to other cities in the UK.
Unbelievable.
So now they're going to Dallas, Pennsylvania, and they'll be there at the university. And it's called the, I have it right here, it's hard to pronounce.
Right.
Mr. Cordia Museum there in Dallas, PA.
All right. Uh-huh.
I'll be there for about, I think, 2 or 3 months.
Well, they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I guess.
they started out there, but
they moved
them on into New York, perhaps, and then perhaps maybe find a place here in Vegas and have a permanent home for them.
Uh-huh. Do they still fit?
Oh, heck no. I don't even curse. I almost cursed it.
Let's talk about your solo career, because we talked about the Supremes. Actually, in 1979, you did a solo album. That was Midnight Dancer and Pick Up the Pieces and a whole lot of good tunes on that album.
It was red hot.
Thank you. The sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet. been mine. Life's been good to me.
Out shortly, but it also can be heard, I think, on my website.
We're going to play that. You know we're going to play that.
Okay. It hasn't quite been released yet, but I don't think they'll mind because they should be releasing it within a couple of weeks. But it is out in the UK.
Well, I have a lot of your solo stuff. I have Love Talk and some of those tunes. And
Love Talk, that's one of the ones that wasn't released.
It's not a time for passion, just touch me tenderly. Let all your strength and goodness flow on into me, into me. Let me hear your love talk, sweet and gentle in my ear. Walk away the pain. Fingers locked together. Oh, my crazy doubts inside. I'm certain of your loving way down deep inside.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know that tune.
That's a Gustavian tune. Yes, Love Talk.
Now,
I love that song.
Now, you also had a career in the theater.
Yes, I've done. I actually, when I was younger, that's what I wanted to be, an actress. Uh-huh. I never really thought about being a singer. I wanted to be an actress.
Right.
And I've done things like vagina monologues. I've
right.
done some off-Broadway plays.
Right. Beehive, I know.
I did, yes. So I really love the theater, but I've raised my children.
Yeah.
I've tried to keep my career afloat. I've tried to build my name. So I never really got a chance to study acting as much as I wanted to. I did study a lot.
Right.
A lot of great teachers, but I was always had to go back and sing my Supreme songs to make a living.
Well, no, that's funny.
But I haven't given up the hope. I really, really love being on stage, especially
yeah.
in the theater.
Well, you've done enough things in the theater. What was Grandma Sylvia's funeral?
That was
Tell
hilarious.
Us about that.
It was a Jewish play. When
How
I
was it?
Written by a Jewish guy,
uh-huh.
but the character was to be a Jewish woman,
right?
But because I was black, they had to change it over to I married into the family.
Why not? You can hey, you can
Grandma
you,
Sylvia. Was
you could be Mary. You could be Mary Leibowitz. You could
okay.
you could do that.
Yeah, marry into like Sammy Davis is. So
right,
was,
right.
Right. But anyway, Grandma Sylvia died,
uh-huh.
and so the whole. The theatrical piece is about her funeral.
Ah.
And what it is the play opens up outside when they're bringing in her, you know, the casket and all, and then she falls out of the casket. So that tells you
right
there it's going to be, you know, funny.
Right.
And then we go into the theater, and the whole thing is about how the family acts or reacts at the funeral. So
listen,
that's why it's called Grandma.
I've spent my whole life going to Jewish funerals, and let me tell you, they're in the funeral, they're all talking about the stock market or their golf game. So that's it.
It was about everything but Grandma Sylvia.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious. I absolutely adored playing that.
Tell me about Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme.
Well, Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme is my book, my first book that I wrote.
Right.
And I kept diaries my entire life. So this was after my school teacher, Mr. Boone, said I should become a writer.
Wow.
We were going down to Motown. You know, after we graduated, and you know, everything was so exciting. I mean, I was seeing Marvin Gaye, and, you know, we were there when Stevie Wonder came into
right.
his audition.
Uh-huh.
And just being around these beautiful people, and just out of high school, I started writing about it because Mr. Boone said I should be a writer. So that's
wow.
how I kind of got started. And I kept these diaries throughout all of our travels all over the world.
Uh-huh. What about Don't Get Mad, Get Even?
Don't Get Mad, Get Even. Well, that was actually one of the recordings I did in the U.K.
Because the title struck me. I said, is that a personal statement, or was that just some lyrics that somebody wrote?
Hey, girl, it's time for us to stop feeling sorry for ourselves. We gotta go out there and lift our heads up high and just love again.
Uh-huh. I don't know if it was a company, but he recorded a lot of the old Motown artists
right.
over in the UK, and that was one of the songs that he wanted me to sing. But I don't think it was ever really released, even though it's out someplace.
Because I'm looking at some of these titles. There's Sleeping in Separate Rooms, Stronger in a Broken Part, you know, The One I Love, and I'm saying these are, you know, whoever wrote these tunes, some of them they're pretty down tunes. You know, they're pretty strong tunes.
You know what it is? People have a perception of my life because I've gone through so many ups and downs.
Right.
And they actually write pretty sordid kind of things as far as I'm concerned because I'm a very happy person.
Right, yes, you are.
Anyway, people have written songs for me, and it always seems like they look at my life and they think it's very tragic.
Right.
Which is quite the opposite. I mean, I have this thing of, I think that life is up and down, up and down, up and down. But I don't look at the downs any any more than I look at the up.
Well, you need the down in order to appreciate the up, because then there's no contrast.
The down are part of the light.
I agree.
But I have this great ability, always have, to be able to, okay, if something tragic happens, I can deal with it and then I move on.
Right.
But people tend to think that you live in that moment, and I really don't. So some of those songs, yes, they are pretty heavy. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll have to sing it, but this is not the way I feel today.
Right. Well, you know,
you've
been busy since you first stepped into the genre. I mean, you know, you've either been singing with a group that had more hits than any other ladies group, and of course, you know, your solo career and your acting career, and you've, as I look back upon your career, I mean, you're always in the studio, and you're always recording.
I'm always, because I love what I do. I mean, when I met Flo, Diane, and Betty, and Barbara in the earlier days, I knew that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So, I mean, that's what I do.
Right.
Why jump ship when it's cool? I did jump ship when we disbanded the Supremes.
Well, I know, you know, and we don't have to go into that. I know there was a lot of legal stuff around it, and, you know, and a name that big, you know, everybody wants a piece and wants to push it around and whatever. But you want to know something? My feeling is, you were there from start to finish and had all of those hits and are loved for it. And probably there are no regrets. I mean, you know, it's like you did everything you could do to make it great, and it was great.
Right. Well, I enjoy it. But one other thing I want to bring up,
sure,
that I had such a wonderful time doing, and that is, even as the Supremes, we had to do a lot of public work that, you know, public diplomacy, that type
right.
of thing. And so when I went solo, I found that I still enjoyed doing things that had nothing to do with performing. You know, it was pretty much helping people doing this.
Right.
So I've been asked to be a part of HDI, which is Humpty Dumpty Institute, which
right.
is a company, an NGO company, that deals with landmine clearances.
Right.
And which has to do with, you know, unexploded ordnances.
Right.
And bombs and things
right.
lying around different countries where they've had civil wars and
right.
other kind of wars.
Right.
And so it's actually, just to make it clear without going into too much of it, was, I think Princess Diana actually was the person who brought it to the forefront and to our recognition that
right.
was going on. So once she passed away, there was no one to speak out on it, and I was asked to be a spokesperson for it.
Right.
So I've traveled around the world, you know, bringing up this idea that we need to do something to get rid of these bombs, and people come in their countryside, or some children can't go to school in Laos, some farmers can't grow their crops and have cattle in Vietnam and places like that because there's still bombs that have been that are unexploded lying around,
right?
Or laying around, I should say,
right.
in their countryside.
Well, you know, that's what why when I introduced you, I also called you an ambassador and a humanitarian, because I know that you also have your Dare to Dream lecture series that you have. And can you tell me more about that?
Yes. Well, I actually started doing my lectures called Dare to Dream when I lost my son.
Right.
In a car accident, because after I lost my son, people were asking me questions about, you know, how did I handle it and how do I feel. So I would go around talking about that, and pretty soon it became, you know, like a business.
Right.
And so that's something that I do now. Universities, I mean, I've actually done my Dare to Dream lecture over in Pakistan at the university there.
Wow, that's very exciting.
South America. So it has exploded into this thing where I actually use my book, my two books actually,
right.
My Life with the Supreme, and I tell that, and within it, it's inspirational, and I give anecdotes of how I got through it and things of that nature. So basically, that's what that's all about.
And
I've done it all over the world. In fact, when I was in Russia, I did it there. At a university there in Russia. So
right.
it's people tend to really like to hear a real story and how people get through it, and then I give them the highs, you know, as well as...
Well, then again, along the way, I think you had a little heart surgery and some other things, and you came right back like the Energizer Bunny and just continue to do what you do.
I'm a little slower now.
Yeah, me too also.
I had the heart attack, which was a big surprise to me because I've always been an extremely healthy person and
right.
lived a fairly healthy life. You know, I've done some crazy stuff.
Right.
You know, but I don't really eat badly.
Right.
I mean, I've grown up eating.
I love to eat.
But, you know, anyway, so yeah, that did happen to me, and I realized that it was genetically something that I'd have to deal with. My family
right.
has had a, you know, history of strokes and things, of diabetes and things, so it's
right.
in my bloodline. And, you know, at 67, I have to deal with it, and I came back, but still I find I'm not as strong as I was before. I have to think about things a little more than I did before. But I feel that that's all part of growing up as well.
Right. The movie Dreamgirls, they say possibly was based on the Supremes. I don't know whether it was, you know, sometimes people just get an idea and they run with it and they make it fictional. How close to the actual Supreme story was the story about the Dreamgirls?
Basically, you just said it. I think that's what happened. I think that the writers of that book, of the original, you know, play, Broadway play,
right.
were probably inspired by maybe not only the Supremes, you know, probably all
right.
the other girl groups.
Right.
They were inspired, but we were at the top at the time, so you know we were very prominent
right.
out there, and I think that they took a lot of liberties and used a lot of our
right.
History and legacies.
Uh-huh.
But it really is not about the Supremes. And as I say every night on stage, I mean, I can tell you truthfully, it's not about the Supremes because they didn't pay me.
Uh-huh. There you go. Did they at least bring you in as a consultant?
No. So you know, but that's something that, again, it could be like the truth in music. People take things these days,
yeah.
and there's almost nothing you can do. If I ever want to really write a Broadway play, which I really do,
right.
it would be very difficult because everyone thinks that Dreamgirls is about the Supremes.
Right.
And they did use a lot of our, you know, sort of likenesses and all. Having said all that, I adore the play.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it was great.
Of art. I just wish they had been more truthful in terms of, you know, who it was or not use us, our images at all.
I understand how that can happen and get out of hand, you know. I have a couple of friends that are writing screenplays now and they're looking for backing and they're doing because they all want to be the Jersey Boys, you know, and recreate that. There's some of my friends are doing The Life of Lloyd Price. They're going to call it Lordy Miss Claudy. They want to take it to Broadway. And, you know, It's funny how the best ideas, and you put a lot of money into it, and there are so many things that can go wrong. By the time you get to the end, only a very few of them really make it.
I just saw Jersey Boys, and it's really wonderful. You know, but what's great about that is that it was done with Frankie Valli.
Right.
So it's a real piece, where a Dreamgirl is the Supreme story in likeness and you know, legacy and
right.
history. But it's not the Supremes. And that's the sad part about this.
I think I just found the song that you auditioned for Berry Gordy with. It's called I'm Sorry.
I know what it was, but I just didn't say it. That song. Don't know it at all, but that was it, yeah.
Let me ask you this. There are thousands and millions, there are millions of people all over this country in every generation and every decade that know and love the Supremes for all those years and hang on every record. We have a jukebox in the house and we have all the Supremes hits and it's a 57 Seaberg jukebox with a couple of hundred records. What would Mary Wilson like to say to the people who have followed you all these years from the time they were young until now and are still playing those wonderful hits? What would Mary Wilson like to say to those people?
Well, you know, really, probably thank you. And I'll tell you why. Because when we started singing, we weren't singing for people. We were singing for ourselves.
I know that feeling. Yep.
You know, yeah, right. As a performer, as a singer, you're really doing it for yourself. Then you realize years later, or you realize when you're on stage and people clapping and laughing and yelling at you, you know, and enjoying your show. Then you realize, oh, people are listening.
Right.
Then you kind of like, oh, wow, we didn't realize that, you know, people were listening to us. So I would say thank you for all the years of listening to our music, because it made it real. It wasn't just selfish. It wasn't just for us. It was for you, too. And I say thank you for listening.
Yeah, well, you know, also, there's an awful lot of thank you that goes to you and all the girls that spend time doing that, because really and truly, as I know about Motown, it was pretty strict. I mean, you know, you had to learn the tunes, you had to learn the steps. By the time you went out there, you were polished. You were polished.
But I must disagree with you.
Go ahead.
People don't realize that. It was heavenly being there and working. No one made us do that. We were there because we wanted to be there. And also, strict is the wrong word, and people have used that.
Uh-huh. But well, that's what I've heard.
No, but it wasn't strict. It wasn't strict. You see, we were in sync. We were there because we wanted to learn. It was like we were in the best school you could ever have.
So it was one big creative party is what you're saying.
Yes. So strict is, and I know what people mean when they say that, you know, but I'm trying to tell you from our outlook of it. It wasn't strict. It
right.
was like we had landed in the best art, what do you call those schools where children learn how to do, be in the theater and all that stuff? I can't think of.
Oh, yeah, but, like the new school in New York where they just, it's totally a school for the arts.
That school for the arts. We
right.
were in a school for the arts. And
right.
we were there without having to pay any money. We were there with other people who wanted to be there. It was the perfect school. We landed right in the School of the Arts.
Well, you said something at the beginning when we started talking, which, you know, I kind of said, that's very interesting. You called Berry Gordy Mr. Gordy. And, and I said, she didn't call him by his first name. She called him the same thing she would have called him when she walked up to him when she was 15 or 16.
Yeah, because he was older. You know, there's a certain respect that people don't have today. In fact, I go to the stores or someplace, you know, like you go to Starbucks or Jaffa Juice, whatever it is. And
right.
they say, okay, what do you want? And you tell them what you want. Then they say, and what is your name? And they want you to say Mary. I say Miss Wilson. They look at me like I'm crazy.
Right. Well, you know,
I feel so disrespectful. here I am. I'm a 67 years old person, and you're going to say Mary? You're going to call me Mary?
No, I understand that too. You
it's
know.
About who I am. It's about the respect for a child or a young person talking to an older person.
And not only that, you see, they when your drink is ready, they don't even call you by your name. They just like hand it to you and say, "Here's your mochiata."
Right, but I mean, I don't like it. I think that we're not teaching our children respect. We've lost respect.
Not only do they call you by your first name, is then they charge you $6.99 for your coffee.
Exactly. Well, of course, people will say you don't have to go. Well, that's true, but I have to love Starbucks. My espresso macchiato, I love.
Oh, me too, you know, me too. But you see, the problem with Starbucks is it took me a year and a half how to learn to speak the language to be able to go in there and order a coffee, because you can't just say, you know, I want a regular coffee with a little bit of cream and two Splendors. You know, you have to learn the language, you know.
I don't mind that because I love learning. In fact, I went back to, and I'm only leading up to a story, not to disagree with what you're saying. But
no, go ahead. I'm listening.
I went back to, not back to college, but I went to college in 1996, I think I started.
Okay.
At New York University.
I know it well.
And I graduated. I got my associate's degree. And, you know, I graduated the whole bit. So I'm very proud that I went back to college, because that's what my mom wanted me to do when we were at Motown and we decided to, you know, stay and sing and not go to college.
That's fantastic.
So I finally did that because I absolutely adore learning. I remember when we were traveling around Europe and Mr. Gordy said something about learning, and what would you ladies like to do? You're making all this money. I said, I'd like to maybe have a teacher travel on the road with us so we can learn different languages and learn different things.
Wow.
I've always loved learning.
And what was your, when you went to NYU, what did you get your degree in? Was it literature?
Actually, it wasn't, but I studied a lot of literature. It was liberal arts. It was a liberal arts, program. But I was able to study everything I ever wanted to. But I didn't study math. I hate math. I failed. I didn't do well. And I didn't take it in college because I can count. I can buy what I want to buy. But I did have a lot of literature when I went to college. Mm-hmm. I took computer. I took art class. I took everything that I just wanted to, sort of get involved in.
Now, are you a Pisces?
I am a Pisces.
I am a Pisces, too, because I noticed it's March 6th and mine is on March 18th. So Pisces, they're special people. I mean, they're at the end of the zodiac. And me, I'm very ethereal. I fly around the room. And I'm so much in the now that I couldn't tell you what I'm going to do tomorrow and next week because I'm right here now, always.
Yes. I love being a Pisces. It's gotten me into a lot of trouble because I can see both sides of things. And
yeah.
So people have said that I'm indecisive. And I guess I am because of that, because I can see, the front of the hand and the back of the hand all at the same time. It's like, what do I do? Because you got to make a decision. And But I enjoy that, and that's how I think I'm so flexible in life.
Uh-huh.
Some people are just, I can get through things. When I lost my son.
Right.
An abusive marriage.
Uh-huh.
Losing Florence at a young age.
Right.
A lot of really.
Oh, when you lose part of the team, I mean, are you kidding me? Because you are so spiritually connected to people that you sing and make harmony with. I mean, I know how that is. You're actually spiritually connected to these people.
Yes, exactly. And it's just very difficult, but you got to learn how to move on. That's another thing, and you can learn how to move on by knowing that you may be in a bad situation now, but in the next minute you can be in a good situation. And if you decide to stay in the bad, then you're going to miss the good that's coming your way.
Well, yeah, I think, when people get stuck, things change when you move. A lot of people get stuck and they get immobile, and when you do that, everything just freezes. Movement, whenever you move, if you move one little thing, everything else starts to move. So it's all about, you got to keep moving,
But it also starts in thought, because it's the thoughts.
Thoughts.
If you can't move, just think, and
right.
God will kick you where you need to go.
Oh, yeah, thoughts. Yeah, that's right.
Kick you out.
Thoughts.
Where you don't need to be. I've been kicked out a lot of places.
I hear you.
And it was
because of your thoughts?
I'm supposed to move.
Well, thoughts are things. I mean, people, you got to be careful what you think. They have sometimes, they used to say, you got to go on, you got to watch your thoughts, and you got to go like on a positive thought diet because, you can control your thoughts more than you think.
Well, wonderful.
Well,
you are a Pisces.
Oh, yeah. Now, you did a duet with Eddie Kendricks, I know.
I think I Can't Take My Eyes Off of You was one of the things he and I did together.
What's your favorite Supremes tune?
Everyone asks what is my favorite Supremes tune, and I don't have one.
Well, that's good because, one was as good as the next. What's funny about them is that as the group evolved, it kind of changed. The sound kind of changed. It got sometimes a little rowdier. It got sometimes a little laid back. It really covered all the bases as far as the writing went and the different types of tunes,
Each girl who came in brought her own vibe, let's say. Jean Terrell brought a totally different kind of vibe from what we had in with the original group. And as I said, if you had to ask me which group I like best, of course, I'm going to say the original group.
Well, of course. Yeah, I agree with you.
As far as I'm concerned, there was nothing like me, Flo, and Diane.
Which is great. Does Mary talk to Diane much these days? You talk to her at all?
Well, not really, but I think and hope that will happen soon.
Yeah.
I really do. But I also want to get back to the point where I was speaking about the different groups. Jean Terrell brought in, for me, it was a more soulful R&B sound.
Right.
And I absolutely adored what she brought to the group.
Uh-huh.
I really did. But, you know, as again, I said, it was almost for me like I was in another group. So I don't even compare them. I mean, I know most people do, but I don't compare the groups. To me, it was just a different group.
Oh, interesting. Now, is it true that you once recorded the Ballad of Davy Crockett?
That's one of our earlier albums, yes.
That's very interesting because, you know, we all knew that. Fess Parker sang it.
Well, we did a country and western album, the Supremes did. We did a lot of novelty kind of albums that
right.
I really enjoyed. Love Talk is a Gus Dudgeon song I was telling you about before.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that, Stephen, oh my God, I can never pronounce his last name, wrote one of the songs. It was Love Talk, You Dance My Heart Around the Stars. And that was done by Stephen Kalinch. I hope I'm pronouncing his name
uh-huh.
correctly.
We'll Google him.
And also, well, Take Me Back Home Where Cool Waters, Creedence Clearwater, I can't think of the name of the Greenwater, I can't think of it.
uh-huh.
But anyway, the Love Talk is a part of the four songs that I did where Motown actually dropped me from the company.
Hmm, interesting.
The heck, what are you singing? So Love Talk was one of those. I loved that song.
Tell
but You Dance My Heart Around the Stars, I always thought should have been the soundtrack for one of the Superman movies.
Oh. All right, well, Mary, tell me about the engagement that you're going to do at the Riviera Hotel.
Well, first of all, I will be appearing at the Riviera Hotel, one of the old staples of Las Vegas, on June 22nd through July 3rd. And I will be there with my band and my two singers, and I'm going to do all of the Supreme, well, I don't say all the Supreme songs, but I'm going to do many of the Supreme songs and some surprises as well. So come on and see me at the Riviera, June 22nd through July 3rd.
That's great. I think Paulette and I are going to try to get out there during that time, you know, and then we'll just have one big happy family. So say hello to our mutual friend, my good buddy Don Riggio, when you see him, and thank him very much for hooking us up again. And Mary, just have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for this time.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure talking to someone who knew, I'm sorry, if I've ever made you cry.
Mary, thank you so much for being a guest. I just worship everything that you and the Supremes have done. When Paulette and I get out to Vegas, we're going to come and see you and maybe get together.
Okay, and tell Paulette, you know, I wish her the best.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Let's listen one more time to Mary's new single, Life's Been Good to Me.
All right, all right, all right. Now let's bring my next guest. She's one of the founding members of the legendary group Supreme. She's now on tour on the release Life's Been Good to Me. So coming to the stage, this is Mary Wilson. Let's give her a round of applause.
Been good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet.
I travel from country to country. Was only trying to make it out the city. And never in my wildest dreams I would make history. I guess you could say this project girl got lucky.
Life been good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet. Been alright with me. And I'm thankful for the life I got to live my dreams.
You've only got one life, so live it, dear. So I'm blessed that I've been privileged. Can't forget about the ones that helped me along the way. I'm living witness life can bring you joyful days.
Good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet. Life, been alright with me. And I'm thankful for the life I got to live my dreams. Life, been good to me. Even though the sun didn't always shine, it's still been sweet.
Life's been good to me.
Let's just sit back and listen to more of Mary Wilson.
Wonderful time, and I won't do too much talking because I know you guys just want to get out of that rain. But I am so very happy that you all showed up tonight. The Vocal Group Hall of Fame is such a wonderful place, and we want to see you guys each and every year. And make sure you go to the museum, okay? And make sure when you see a group, it's the original group. All right. So we're going to do a little reflections. How about that? Okay? Yes? Okay. Okay. Just do it. Just do it. They ready to go.
Through the mirror of my mind, time after time, I see reflections of you and me. Me all alone with only memories through the mirror of my mind, through the tears that I'm crying, reflects the hurt I can't control.
so much. All right.
Hi, this is Charlie Thomas of the Drifters, and you listen to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Mike told me to tell you that.
Great woman. Well, now they say alongside every great man, there's a great woman, and you can do anything and be anything you want. And you can too, Mark, okay? You can be president if you want to, okay? So all you have to do is just say, this is what I want to do, and go after it and make your dreams come true. And never, ever give up your dreams, okay? Never give up your dreams, all right? Yes? Okay, now going out there and play.
Told you.
Life is about movement. So for me, never give up your dreams is something you got to always keep in your mind. You got to keep in your mind, do I want to, you know, what do I want to do? And so that's what I've always done. I mean, people could have said, well, you're a background singer, you'll never do it.
because you're leaving here, I should shed my pride. It's just to show how much I love you. And where you go, my love. Where you are, or if you find someone new, long ago I will my life to you, and I can change my heart, even though we'll be apart. Don't let my teardrops bother you. The reason I'm crying.
Hello, this is Carl Gardner from the Coasters. We're listening to the Harmony Street Show with Mike Miller.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Mary Wilson.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch, and I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived, and I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. I can't take my eyes off of you. Part of the way that I stare, there's nothing else to compare. The sight of you leaves me weak. Oh, and there are no words left to speak. But if you feel like I feel, please let me know that it's real. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
I want you back in my life.
Well, that was our visit with Mary Wilson of the Supremes on the Harmony Street Show. This is Mike Miller saying so long and see you next time. Be safe and be well.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found,
ooh. On Harmony Street, ooh. There was a place that we used to go, when we were feeling down, and we were low. Other's eyes about the road that led us to Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? Other's heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. Time on Harmony Street, we couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Nothing I could do, nothing to say. We looked into each other's eyes and found a lonely thoroughfare on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how it used.